Now, you're the spiritual advisor for what? What's the name of the group?
American Vanguard.
American Vanguard. Okay, and you're pretty knowledgeable about what's called the alt-right.
Yeah,
or the alternative right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and being a Christian pastor, high school teacher, I didn't even know what it was until I had you as a student, and then you told me about the alt right, and eventually I looked up some stuff online and started finding out little bits and pieces, and you've got the friends, you've got the foes, and that type of thing. But I wondered if you could kind of help us, explain to us what exactly is the alt-right? Is it one big homogenous group, or there's a lot of different views? What exactly is it? And what do you think are the good sides, the bad sides, and things of that sort?
Okay, well, first off, the easiest way to define them is a massive reactionary political movement.
Okay.
Now for the longer answer. The alternative right started in the early 2010s as a big tent, semi-organized, loose-knit organization of various political views.
Wait, when was that?
In the early 2010s. Okay. Richard Spencer of the National Policy Institute started alternativeright.com, and he allowed a voice for people that were monarchists. He allowed paleoconservative voices. He's a big fan of Samuel Francis. So there were four groups that originally comprised what is now called the alternative right. Originally, it was neo-reactionaries. The neo-reactionaries were disaffected libertarians that believed that democracy and liberty are incompatible. So they believed that either we needed a king or we needed a greatly reduced suffrage in America to only propertied males. And a good name for that, it's a silly pseudonym, it's Mencius Moldbug. He and Nick Land started that and wrote these big manifestos. So all these libertarians that saw the libertarian movement moving left, with Bell Knox becoming a porn star and declaring, "I'm a libertarian now," with feminists infiltrating the movement, libertarianism was no longer about private property and allowing people to sink or swim with their own businesses and the government being hands-off. It was more about libertinism.
Yeah, and I tend to agree, too. When I look at the Libertarian Party, every once in a while they have a good candidate for president or something, but more times than not, you watch these libertarian debates, and it's just all about sin, and it's all about, like, flaunting their sin, and it's like, wow, I could get this from the Democratic Party convention. What is this?
Yeah. And the second group in the early alternative right was the paleoconservatives. Now, there's a big difference between libertarian and paleoconservatives, because the paleoconservatives try to take not only the same policies but the same mindset as the founders, and also offer a large critique of America as it is today. So you have Sam Francis, Paul Gottfried, the critiques of what's now known as the managerial or the deep state. Right now in America, you have a cooperation between the federal government and large corporations for leftist means. And it's the center of power is not always in the federal government. It's just kind of a collective of private and civil interests.
Mm-hmm.
So with Gottfried and Francis commenting on this, and Pat Buchanan being the only real politician that's ever really fought against it, paleoconservatives were more or less censored.
Mm-hmm.
The third group is, in the early alternative right, was white nationalists. This is Jared Taylor, Richard Spencer, Gregory Hood, all these writers. That the softer side of white nationalism is the belief that white people deserve and should organize for their own benefit. Our society right now is being divided by race, and we see that in political sphere. Black Lives Matter. What are their demands? Well, they want to end school choice. They want to federalize the police. They want to end the drug war, essentially legalizing drugs and bring reparations back with a livable wage for all African Americans. Well, who's the biggest tax-paying race in America? That's whites. In fact, white men. Can't they represent themselves in some fashion to resist what's obviously bad for them? That's the softer side of white nationalism. The harder side of white nationalism is the 1488 crowd that you see with Andrew Anglin and the Daily Stormer. 1488 means 14 words, which is, we must, what's that? We must preserve a future for our children, for our people, and a future for white children. Something like that. Close. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. That's not that controversial, but then 88 is originally there is an 88 word blurb that Hitler put in Mein Kampf, and the 88 H is the eighth letter of the alphabet, so 88 is Heil Hitler. Now, I have no problems with 14 words, because if every other racial group is looking out to take money from the white man and take representation out from it, what is wrong for white people to say, hey, fair is fair, we need to represent our own interests? When you get on the farthest edge of that, where it's, you know, gas the kikes, raise war now, is one of their mottos. That kind of thing, I'm not so much for. I personally don't think we need that kind of rhetoric, and I don't hate anybody. But it's not a bad idea for whites to represent themselves.
I believe all people should be able to represent themselves, but I consider myself a member of the human race. And so I don't like to break people into categories and things of that sort. Now, like for instance, on immigration, I believe if people from other cultures want to assimilate with us and become part of our culture, I think the American culture is lost due to multiculturalism, which is just a whole undermining of America. But I believe if people wanted to assimilate with what used to be the American culture, I have no problem with people from other cultures coming in. I would be opposed to illegal immigration. But for legal immigration, of those who want to assimilate with us, not annihilate our culture. Things have certainly gone downhill since then. How would the white nationalist view that? View immigration, basically.
Well, most of them believe in what's known as HBD, or human biodiversity. If you're an evolutionist, it's foolish to claim that everybody evolved from the neck down. They believe that there are certain psychological and neurological differences between the race that is genetic. And it's interesting reading. I don't really care for it. But if you do believe that race exists, then let's look at their activities. If we're going to be grouping everybody according to race, as America's doing right now, then let's look at what they do. First off, I disagree with regarding to assimilation, because everybody that's immigrating to America is going to claim they want to assimilate. Most of them are going to be lying. I don't know how you're going to test that or have some gotcha question to see whether or not they're lying.
I think we do a much better job than we're doing. Like, for instance, the South Koreans and the Rodney King riots. I remember when a group was rioting and breaking things, and they're primarily black. And then they came to the South Korean part of L.A. with the South Korean businesses, and young and old, the South Korean males were standing on the roofs of their businesses holding shotguns and rifles. And nothing was broken. They continued to walk by. And so I see the South Koreans there as being more American, these immigrants and their sons being more American than even I am.
And that's perfectly fine, but the problem is, okay, South Koreans have assimilated. Why don't people from the Middle East? And 99% of them don't assimilate. Their goal is to Kia. So when you look at it and you look at the behaviors of each races, there's something that the government does in the called the National Crime Victimization Survey. They found that from 2003 to 2009, on average, let's look at rape. In 2005, I believe it was 19,800 white women were raped by black men. Zero, or close to zero, black women were raped by white men. This trend continued from 20,000 to 35,000 white women being raped by black men, and the complete polar opposite of zero white men raping black women every single year. And it's been this case ever since they started the National Crime Victimization Survey.
Which is when?
I think they did it for a while. It's back in the 70s? Because the idea being is people aren't going to lie to you on a survey about who did what, because they want the crime solved when they report the crime. So, okay, when it comes to rape, assault, murder, battery, theft, burglary, blacks commit crime at a severely higher proportional rate to the rest of the races in America. Why is that? The white nationalist will reply, it may be cultural, and may need some severe action. It may be a biological reason, and there are some people like Jared Taylor who believe in genetic differences between the race, and it may be something that is completely different. It could be a spiritual reason. But if you expect white people to continue to be accountable for every single action a black person does, oh, they're in poverty and they're committing crimes because of racism. That's stupid. That's ridiculous. And to punish white people and to claim that they owe reparations when you're denying that black people have free will to do what they want, all you are doing is taking an anti-white stance.
Well, and I see that Alex Haley, when he was interviewed on the 700 Club shortly before he died, Pat Robertson asked him if he sees racism as a problem in America. And Alex Haley obviously was the black author of Roots, who traced back his roots and all. And but Alex Haley's response kind of shocked Pat Robertson, because Alex Haley said, yes, there's a major problem with racism in America today. He said, when I was growing up, never in the rural areas, but only in the inner cities, would you find a small percentage of black males who hated whites. Now, as the years have gone by, he says you can be in the cities or the rural areas, but lots and lots of black males hate whites. And so Pat Robertson meant white on black racism. Alex Haley saw the problem in the other direction. But what I'm getting at, though, is too, and I think we're all human beings, all created in God's image, all descendants of Adam and Eve, and maybe, you know, some cultures have been more influenced by the Christian worldview, some haven't. But I think with things like slavery, and I'm not for reparations or anything, but right now I think slavery is continuing in the welfare system.
That's fine. The white nationalist hates slavery. Mm-hmm. Richard Spencer calls it the great American mistake. But here's the thing. All of us have heard about diversity and how diversity is our strength and multiculturalism is our strength. But you're not allowed to notice that only countries which are historically white are told that. Japan is incredibly racially homogenous, and none of the leftists that say white people need, and none of them that are saying white people need to check their privilege and we need to embrace diversity and we need to even race mix, none of them are saying that to the Japanese. None of them are saying that to the Chinese. None of them are saying that to Mexico.
In all these
homogenous areas, the only white people are told to do that because effectively they want a genocide of white people.
You know, and I do agree that there is an anti-white. It's like I'll joke sometimes and say that I'm not a racist. Some of my best friends are white guys. And the reason why I'm joking is because white guys are the only guys you're allowed to joke about anymore. But I think what's going on, though, here is I think we have a president and an administration and even an entire political party that want race wars. So as they get blacks to be unjustly angry with whites, I think that the current president, I think, would be overjoyed to see whites then getting angry at blacks and then join in on this kind of race war type violence.
And I guarantee you 99.999999% of the alt-right, none of us want race war. Only the most extreme of them really want that.
You don't want race war. What do the white nationalists want? They want a white nation.
Some of them do. Greg Hood, he has a fantastic article talking about how white people are treated, white men specifically, where you're hated because of your race, your kid is going to be brought up to be hated because of your race, because let's face it, John Dewey and the Frankfurt School together are teaching your kid this stuff. And especially, what was it, Howard Zinn's People's History of America teaches them that white people are essentially the cause of all evil. And that's stupid. It's horrible. It's to say that because a race is successful in its goals and then ignore what everybody else has done throughout history, that's what they're indoctrinating your children into.
Yeah, and I would like to see the contribution of Christianity. Like, for instance, Western civilization, as influenced by Christianity, didn't invent slavery, it inherited slavery. And when Western civilization came of age, it was the only places on earth that abolished slavery.
Yes, that means that white people are the first group to ever abolish slavery.
Well,
the Civil War wasn't us being evil slave masters. That was us.
I think we cannot underestimate the fact that these so-called white people were greatly influenced by the Christian worldview. That's what caused us to do the things that we did to abolish slavery.
Well, here's the thing, though. If somebody is in a Christian culture but they're not Christian, that can actually lead to really deleterious effects on their worldview. Calvinism is one of those. Because Calvinists, at their core, Calvinists don't believe in free will. Mm-hmm. At least hyper-Calvinists like Gordon Clark don't believe in free will. So what that does, though, is because they observe the agency of a dominant group or ethnic group in a place, and they see a lack of agency in the minority groups, what they assume is that, therefore, because there's no free will, the dominant group is somehow oppressing the minor group. That's actually the effect of Calvinism on the left, is the disbelief in free will. And that's bad. That's really bad, because that essentially is now the left and the atheistic culture around us is creating a pseudo-Christianity, where Hitler is your devil, Neil deGrasse Tyson and Martin Luther King Jr. Martin Luther King Jr., by the way, was an atheist, but they're your prophets and your saints, and white people are the non-elect evil ones, that's a minority.
Do you see Hitler as a good guy?
Do I? No. Yeah. Okay. I'm a fascist, not a national socialist. I think his original goal, do you know what it was regarding the Jews? Internal memos in Germany, Nazi Germany, show that the original plan was to take over Palestine and deport all the Jews there. So I think World War II, even though I have some serious disagreements with Hitler, I think World War II should never have happened, because then you would have had a peaceful result of what it took 60 million lives to do in the first place. In fact, he was attacked by most people for being not anti-Semitic enough when you actually read Mein Kampf.
I've read Mein Kampf.
He doesn't say he wants to just exterminate all the Jews.
But he was anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic.
Here's the thing about that. In the civic religion of today, which is based on a corrupted non-Christian Calvinism, when they say that, Hitler was anti-Semitic, and just one day, Magic Mustache Man got up and made a speech that was so great that everybody hated Jews after that. That wasn't the case. Jews have not behaved purely, as everybody says they have. 90% of the Bolshevik and Menshevik parties in the Russian Revolution, 90% of their leadership was Jews, 30% of their general leadership fighting the revolution in 1918 was Jews. And what was the first thing they did? One of the first things they did was the Holodomor, where a Jew, Aaron Yagoda, working for Stalin, killed 7 to 10 million ethnic Ukrainians, because his logic was, I'm a Jew, they're Ukrainians, I hate them because they're Ukrainians. We look at that, and where do you hear people talking about that in comparison to the Holocaust, where Jews administrated
the death of 7 to 10 million? Do you think the Jews deserved the treatment they got?
No, I don't. But it wasn't illogical. During the Spanish Civil War, the people out there killing nuns in the street, 10% of the Spanish population was killed. And 25,000 Jewish Russian revolutionaries were sent to Spain to fight there and to carry out what was known as the Red Terror. So we talk about Franco's White Terror and about the 250,000 people he disappeared in the process of that war. But let's face it, people weren't being irrational at the time. They saw Jews doing this all over the place, and their conclusions, while I think a little bit extreme, were logical at the time. You're not allowed to
I wouldn't say
this.
They
You're
were irrational, but I would say they were racist. Whenever you start punishing a whole group of people for the actions of some of the people within, I want to get the guilty guy. I don't care if the guilty guy's Jewish, black, Portuguese, Italian. I want to get the guilty guys. I don't want to round up and say, okay, a few of your people did this, so we're gonna get all of you.
And this is where there's a very important book by Kevin MacDonald called The Culture of Critique, where he states he's an evolutionist, and he thinks that it's what Jews do and have historically done is an evolutionary strategy. And I would disagree with him. I think that there's something spiritual going on along the lines of Romans 9 through 11. There is a hardening there that we notice. If you read the Talmud, it's the most anti-Christian document of the from 2nd century to the Renaissance. Jews aren't allowed to step in Christian churches or touch a bottle of wine that a Gentile has touched or a Christian has touched. But they can go into mosques. They can hang out with Muslims. But you look at their history. Karl Marx, he was a Jew. Freud. He was a Jew who said quite plainly, I want to corrupt the Gentiles, corrupt the Goyim. You look at all these people to the left, the Frankfurt School originally was all Jews. Hey, can we be real about this and say, look, Jews don't have your best interests. And all the support of Israel that we do, or that we have here in America, isn't reciprocated. Most of the Jews that collect money from the evangelical Christian community will say in private that they hate the Christian. That you find that on Haaretz, you find that on...
I've been to Israel twice, and I did feel that the Palestinian evangelical Christians treated me much better and were much more loving to me, and they themselves are somewhat victims, not the Palestinians in general, but the Palestinian Christians. But I don't like this idea of just grouping a whole people together.
But that's already happening. In fact, most of the articles, if you go onto Salon and you look at people like Tim Wise, who will say, we white people need to check our privilege and we white people have done all this evil stuff, they're Jews. Most of them will say they're white, but they're Jews that behind closed doors or in other articles you find them advocating for racial purity among Jews and for Jews to seek out their own interests, what they're telling everybody else not to do.
You do believe Jesus is Jewish?
Yes, the incarnation, although I do wonder whether or not the hypostatic union was an institution that happened multiple times, like when Christ was in the Garden of Eden, was he a Jew then? When Christ appeared to Samson,
I would see that as a pre-incarnate visitation of Christ. He would have just basically taken on bodily form.
Necessarily Jewish? I mean,
It wasn't even human though, to be a human, you have to be a descendant of Adam. So to be a descendant of Adam, he's got to be conceived in the womb of a woman, and that didn't occur. He appeared as a man in the Old Testament, but he wasn't really a human, so he wasn't really Jewish then. But when he was conceived in the womb of Mary, you would agree he was Jewish.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that. But then again, Jews hate Jesus. You look up the Talmud, you read about
and
Yeshua,
there are some Jews. There's always
a
remnant.
The Talmud states that Jesus is in hell, burning and boiling in excrement or semen, one of the other. And that's Orthodox Jews like Michael Medved know this stuff, and they're not telling you.
If we're
going to judge a people by the content of their character, well, let's look at their collective character, what most of them are advocating for, and they're advocating for everybody in this room to say there's only one race, the human race, but then they'll tell their buddies, look, we're all Jews, and we need to advocate for ourselves. So they're very traditionalist.
The Jews that I know in America today, of course, I'm not around the Northeastern Jews who tend to be very liberal, but the Jews I know today, like Rabbi Daniel Lappin from Western Washington and stuff like that, have been very, very pro-Christian.
We can say that not all of them are like that or whatever, but if America is constantly hammering this, let's group each other by races and everything like that, and every race is told to think racially and for their own group, except white people, and then you notice that the people saying this are Jews, can we say... Wait a second. That's not cool.
That illustration seems though to be like, okay, everybody is peeing on my buddies, and that's not right. Me and my buddies need to start peeing on everybody else. I don't see the biblical mandate to that. I think that if others are doing or being racist and grouping people together and prejudging people, I don't play that game.
So what you're saying is white people should be above it all.
What I'm saying is I don't even know what a white person is, and I could care less what a white person is. I know what a redeemed person is, and a person who serves Jesus, who should want to preach the gospel and the unity. I don't want unity of mankind apart from Christ. I want unity in Christ. I don't want to build a Tower of Babel, but I want to come down from the upper room preaching the gospel message to people from many different nations.
And that's absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. But on a civic level, is it okay for white people to represent their own interests in a peaceful fashion? Is that immoral? Is that a sin?
I wouldn't say it's immoral, but I think that the most moral thing to do in a situation like that is to proclaim, which is what I've been doing from the rooftops, that we are one race. We are one human race. And I'm not going to say, well, these guys doing this, these guys are doing that, so let's go get them.
And you know what you're going to be told in the public sphere, and the intellectuals will tell you, you're right. There is race is a social construct, and that's why white people got to pay. It's the most confusing and schizophrenic thing you see in academia today, where all races are equal and there's no such thing as race. Race is a social construct, except for white people who are evil and need to pay because of all the stuff.
By the way,
whiteness isn't real either.
I think my approach, though, doesn't play into the hands of the political leaders who would love race against race.
The problem, I don't think the political leaders really want race against race.
I think they do.
Historically, they know that white people are like the, let's face it, we're the indisputed champions of organized violence throughout history. They don't want the KKK coming back unless they want to fundraise off of them. They want to keep white people as more or less the stuck pig that they keep taking money out of to give to their clients that vote for them.
I think that there are many politicians who would love white nationalists, and you could say, well, they wouldn't do such a thing, would love to see white nationalists break into a Black Lives Matter movement and start fighting the Black Lives Matter guys. And I think we have a lot of leaders who would love to say, hey, look at all this garbage going on. Now, because we love you, we're going to be here to suspend the Constitution and initiate martial law. So I don't think I just don't go there. I just don't take the bait, and I don't see why the white nationalists would take the bait.
And they're not. Even Andrew Anglin, who is like him and Andrew Arnheimer are the like the farthest extreme you get in terms of white nationalists. They think Hitler was a hero. They deny the Holocaust happened, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But their view of it, even they disavow violence. So what they're looking for a civic solution because they know that
there are some Holocaust deniers in the white nationalism.
Yeah, and most of that is a reaction to the fact that in Europe, if you question the Holocaust or even the total 6 million number, even if you say it was 5,900,999, you go to jail for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Truth shouldn't fear investigation. Really, honestly, that's their standpoint of it. And look, they got good questions.
Would white nationalists? It seems to imply they want a white nation.
Some of them.
Okay, so some white nationalists don't want a white nation.
I would say, what I would say is there's this. If I had to group it, there's three groups. There's people like me who are the Paul Ramsey types. Ramsey Paul believes, look, it's legitimate for white people to have organizations in their own favor and to advocate for themselves the same way the NAACP and the International Jewish Council does. It's perfectly legitimate for them to seek their own interests and a completely peaceful, good way, right? Mm-hmm. There's nothing mm-hmm. sinful about that. There's nothing evil mm-hmm. about that. And if a church tells you that's the case, they're lying to you.
Yeah, but the Italian Americans used to have their own thing back in...
Yeah, and white people, because we're not divided by the left into Italians, Germans, Irish. I mean, technically, I'm Frankish in blood. Okay, well, if they're going to see us all as white people, then guess what? We might as well just say we're all... Okay, sure. But then there's the middle group, which, like Gregory Hood and Richard Spencer, who they believe that the races are biologically different, and the response then is, look, it's like a divorce that is based on irreconcilable differences. They look at the crime statistics and say, okay, you know what? White people need their own nation. And if that means giving the Black Panthers what they want, 5 states in the Southeast, including Florida and Tennessee... Okay, sure. And
I think the Nation of Islam wants something like that, too.
Yeah, but then there's – so that's the second group, and then there's the third group, which is –
So Richard Spencer, if he was – is he a fascist?
He doesn't like talking about his individual governmental policies. He's very against both conservatism and the left.
Okay, but if he were the fascist dictator, and you're telling me he might not even be a fascist, he would divide – white nationalism, he would divide America and keep the races separate?
So he states that he wants an ethno-state on the North American continent in the same way that Israel has a place for all Jews to go. Whenever they want, whoever it is, as long as they're a Jew, they can go to Israel. Then
there's a lot of Palestinians in Israel, too.
Yeah, and he thinks that we should do what the Jews do. And Israel right now has a blood requirement. You have to prove that you're a Jew through a blood test to get free citizenship in Israel. And they also have a border wall. Well, everybody out there that is saying to you that it's okay for Israel to have a border wall but not America is holding a double standard that's really unfair.
So then what you're saying is one group of white nationalists just want to stand up for the rights of white guys.
Yeah.
Another group would like to have a white nation, a white portion of America just for whites if they want to go there.
Yeah, and then there's a third group, which is race war now. Let's use our nuclear arsenal or whatever. I don't honestly think they believe that. I think they're using it as a way to shock people towards the right.
But do they want just like a totally white nation, so they want to start exporting blacks, any non-whites?
I believe that, you're going to get that 1 million out of every million people on the alt-right that really wants to kill them all. And that voice is more or less put down.
Well, I wasn't even talking about killing them all, but you're saying there is that element that kill, if they don't leave, kill them. Others would just say try to get as many non-whites out of the country. What type of white nationalist do you see yourself?
I said it before. I agree with Paul Ramsey, he goes by Ramsey Paul. I'm a nationalist first. So for me, I think that the race problems in America, whatever the genesis, whatever is causing the racial division in America, would be solved with the end of the welfare state, except for those cases of somebody who's like mentally retarded. I believe, I'm a fascist, so I think honestly a fascist government would take care of that problem pretty well.
So you're saying that that a lot of these problems have been caused by the welfare state, destroying the family.
Not just the welfare state, but just the left in general. They've found that people that grew up in broken homes by single mothers vote left. Black people vote left. Every minority votes left. So they want more minorities, more immigrants, and
more
broken
families. Well, every minority group, you mean, as not every individual.
Non-white.
There are
70-90% of them. Mm-hmm. 90% of blacks vote Democrat every election. Mm-hmm. So what I believe is, as long as we're in the Republic as it stands now, it should be perfectly legitimate for white people to organize.
See, I think that the black community has been used by the left, and they're actually victims of the left. Now, victims can grow up to be victimizers, but I think the destruction of the inner-city black church, the destruction of the inner-city black family, and the vicious cycle of poverty, it's like Jesse Lee Peterson is a black preacher. He's a constitutionalist, and he titled the book Get Off the Plantation. And what he's basically arguing for is that blacks need to get off of the welfare system because they're being enslaved, and their present-day masters don't love them any more than the...
The problem is, though, is that the poorest white neighborhood in Appalachia has less crime in it than the richest black neighborhood in Southern California, according to FBI crime statistics. And this may be because black people are raised up to hate white people and to hate the system of white people.
We've got a mission team to Appalachia. I don't think there's much to steal there, for one thing. But
at the same time, even in Detroit, where there's nothing to steal, there's still huge crime problems. And there's, like, if you try to found a business, if a black person wanted to start a business and service everybody, plexiglass is the greatest invention to come out of Detroit because of how many people were getting their shops broken into and stuff like that. You look at the race problem, and again, I'm on the much softer side of it, where I believe that it should be legitimate for white people to represent themselves. There's nothing evil or sinful or unchristian about it, and I love everybody, regardless of their race.
And you think all human beings can be saved?
Yeah.
So you're not like a white supremacist.
Supremacism is that edge of it, of white nationalism, where people believe that you should, kill them all or have a Rahoa, which is racial holy war. I think that's all stupid and that's all unworkable. And most of those people are just LARPing. They're role-playing some sort of fantasy that it's going to happen.
And so the distinction between a white separatist wants to keep the races separate, whereas a supremacist that believes the white race is supreme, and so they either want to enslave or wipe out.
Yeah, let's divide them up, the white nationalists, into three different groups. There's white advocates. I think that's the best term you could put up for me. There's white advocates, there's white separatists, and then there's white supremacists. And that pretty much makes it up.
So you say that you would see yourself as those who advocate for the rights of whites, since it seems like everybody else has rights except them now. But then there are the separatists, which want to keep the races separate. And then there are the supremacists, which want to go to crazy, horrible extremes. But you do consider yourself, though, a white nationalist?
If you had to put me under that umbrella. But honestly, it's not my biggest goal. Mm-hmm. I'm here to serve God, no matter who it is that I'm witnessing to.
Well, see, to me, white nationalism implies you want a white nation.
Or if you see white people as a group and as an ethnos. When Christ, for instance, has people, go and preach to all nations, the word is ethnos. That's ethnicity. That's ethnic groups. And I see no problem in seeing that. And look, honestly, that doesn't mean I have to hate people. That doesn't mean I have to exclude people. But it's perfectly natural to love your own people and support them while still loving everybody else, too. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but there's times when I'd rather hang out with black guys than white guys. I mean, I find some white guys incredibly boring.
And I'm absolutely sure that there's nothing, and again, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. There's nothing wrong. I mean, again, I've got black friends, got Mexican friends, got Asian friends. There's nothing evil about me saying, though, that I should be able to say, hey, I like white people. I want white people to stick around, and I don't want them to disappear off the face of the planet. So, hey, there's nothing wrong with representing them.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we're going to disappear off the
Trust me, there's an concerted effort
in
for
the
it.
Near
Birth rates are falling, and they want it to continue falling.
You talk about Middle Easterners not wanting to assimilate. Because of the Islamic faith, I think that when immigrants want to come to America, it's so difficult to figure out if they want to assimilate or annihilate. I think if people want to come to America and they're Muslims, I think you need to interrogate them a lot longer than you would some poor guy who maybe doesn't have any religious bent, who just wants to come to America for opportunity.
Here's the thing. Usually among immigrants, the second generation is more extreme in their rhetoric than the first. With a lot of the terrorist attacks you've seen in Germany and France, the Islamic gentleman that decided to blow himself up or decided to hack a woman to death after raping her is usually born in Germany, but they were born to parents. There seems to be an extremism in the second generation of immigrants after the parents are immigrants, and that seems to be the case for it. Now,
but see, I see the problem, though, not that the people are Middle Eastern. I see the problem that the people are Muslims.
Well, sure. But anybody will tell you anything to get into the country if they know your policies. And here's the thing.
I have to admit, though, we've had a lot of people blow up things like San Bernardino where somebody with an IQ of 3 could have figured out, okay, these are not good people to let into the country.
Here's the thing, though. One of the reasons we know that Social Security is going to collapse and a lot of old people are going to die unless we change it is because if you subsidize something, you get more of it, and if you tax something, you get less of it. I think that's what the Mises Institute proved that. So if you subsidize every minority through welfare, through beneficial social programs, through affirmative action in universities and hiring practices, and you pay for it with taxes on white people, you're going to get more minorities and less white people. They know this.
Yeah.
And so their goal is to get less white people so that they can have a hegemony, a political hegemony at that.
Yeah, and I agree that that's a big agenda there, but I oppose the welfare system. I don't oppose the black people that it's victimizing.
They would call you racist for that because
the welfare system
is...
Yeah, I've been called a terrorist because I believe Jesus is coming back.
Now, moving on, though, there is a fourth group in the early alt-right that is called they're called radtrads, radical traditionalists. And this is where you get a really motley group of weirdos that are set of vacantists. They believe the Pope is illegitimate. They want to go pre-Vatican II or all the way back to the Council of Trent. You got Mormons
and the Council of Trent, 1546 to 1566.
Yeah. So they think every pope since Vatican II has been illegitimate and a complete anti-pope, if not the Antichrist. You got Greek Orthodox people. You got all these traditional denominations that are pretty much working together to do that. Then you have, on the opposite side of the radical traditionalists, you also have pagans that believe that Christianity stole the religion of their people in ancient Europe, and they want to go back to it. And it's stupid because, look, the Poetic Eddas were written by a monk who adapted them to Christianity to demonstrate that they were perfectly aligned for it. And all the pagans converted to Christianity because their religion sucked. It was more or less a peaceful conquering. They weren't just, oh, convert to Christ or we'll chop your head off. No, yeah. Their religion sucked, and they were tired of declaring war on each other. So the pagan aspect of the traditionalist is stupid. But they'll get mad at me when they hear this. But then there's also Julius Evola, there's Savitri Devi, the weird people that tried to make a religion out of race, and whatever. Part of when I witness two people on the alt-right, something that comes to my advantage is I'm a Lutheran. I'm a part of the Missouri Synod, the conservative. We believe that the Bible is the Word of God. But when you walk into an LCMS church service, you're stepping 500 years back in time. The Reformation's turning 500 next year. And the LCMS is about the closest you're going to get to walking into, like, Wittenberg under one of Martin Luther's sermons. So when I get to talk to people that are on the radical traditionalist side of things, and what they're really searching for is something legitimate to bring them back to it, I can say, look, I got more tradition in my pinky than you have in all of your paganism that you just completely made up. So, hey, come on over to Lutheranism. Or if somebody's Greek Orthodox, I actually try to stress that there is a brotherhood of the Christian denominations, in not in a way that hurts the Word of God, and I don't support heresy. I'm not going to... Mormons are really hard to witness to in this part of it anyway. But when it does come to fostering a group of Christians, I'll advocate for people coming together under that. And I'll kind of battle the set of Akintists because they believe that if you're not a Catholic, you're going to hell. They're super Council of Trent, but whatever.
Now, and I think you've answered this before, but just sum it up in a real brief answer, because I got a few real important questions to ask. Why has the alt-right rejected the two parties? Now, by the way, I've rejected both parties at this point. But
they've rejected the two parties because, one, the left is... So right now, I mentioned those four groups, the neo-reactionaries, the white nationalists, the paleo-conservatives, a la Sam Francis and Pat Buchanan, and then the final group being radical traditionalists. Nowadays, if you really want to be considered alt-right, you add nationalism to all that mix, and you find yourself holding some belief among those four. So that's where it's still a big tent organization because there are a lot of different viewpoints. I'm one of very few actual classical fascists among that group.
Okay. Now, the paleo conservatives or the paleo constitutionalists, are there some of them that are not into this white nationalism bit at all?
No, because originally all these groups were separate in the alt-right. In the alternative right, they were all separate groups that were giving each other a voice to speak. But people like Sam Francis had more or less the same views that I did, that it's perfectly legitimate for white people to love their own race, to support it, but still be okay with everybody else existing so long as they're accountable for their own actions.
So is every in the alt-right, and you mentioned different groups, is everybody in the alt-right in some way, shape, or form on board with the white nationalists?
In some way, I think that's nowadays considered a requirement for it. It's a,
So you've got to have these...
there are a few old souls that get away with not touching it. Like Theodore Beale, also known as Vox Dei, has been a part of the old guard of political heretics for a long time, where he was cast out of polite society because... He believed that women shouldn't be able to vote. He's been part of that, but he's triracial.
Now, Pat Buchanan, with his America First, and I voted for him a couple times, American First policy, and his being opposed to illegal immigration before it was cool to be opposed to it, and then his even wanting to limit legal immigration to the point where we make sure they really want to assimilate. I hear his name thrown around by the alt-right, but he himself is not alt-right.
I wouldn't consider him that, but he's very pro-Western. He thinks that, he wrote books like The Suicide of Superpower and stuff like that. Being so pro-Western civilization, well, the moment you realize that that's white people, like, I dare you, name one invention here in this room that wasn't white people inventing it, you can't.
Wow, there's been, that we are, was it Booker T. Washington, and there have been brilliant blacks, there's some of my black economists like Dr. Thomas Sowell.
You. from these sunglasses to this tablet here to your phones.
Isn't that a form of white supremacy?
No, it's just an acknowledgement of white achievement. And by West, when we talk about Europe and the Americas, that's historically white.
But it seems to me that your assessment of white civilization and white history is a lot kinder and gentler than your assessment of Jewish history. And
there's a reason for that. There's nothing wrong with being proud of your people's accomplishments. You got a lot of black people that say that everybody in Egypt was a king. And sub-Saharan African, Egypt was made of black people, they were kings. They say that the cradle of civilization was black people, and they're proud of that. Okay, cool. I'm proud of white people having invented the light bulb. When it comes to Jews, they have absolutely made good contributions to society and civilization. As a fascist, I have to admit that, because I love Pinochet, and he hired Thomas Friedman and that school, and there were a bunch of Jewish libertarians. Okay. But if we're going to critique other races, as white people have been trampled down and criticized constantly, no matter what, you're evil if you're white, you're evil if you're Christian, can I look at other races too and say, hey, wait. You think we're the cause of all evil, but let's look at what you've done. You want reparations for black people from white people, but how about before that, we make the Jews pay back Russia for communism, because they were the instigators of the Russian Revolution. They were the people that started that murdered the kulaks, that did murder 10 million people in the Holodomor. Or can we just forget about reparations in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, and I agree with forgetting about reparations. I don't think that you can punish people for the sins of their forefathers or whatever the case, but it seems to me that two wrongs don't make a right, and so just because people belittle white,
I'm not advocating for supremacy or killing them all or anything like that.
Now you're studying to be a pastor, so someday you'll be pastoring.
Definitely, by all means, I'm taking a big risk by talking about my ministry.
Well, and then that's one of my concerns was, are you going to be able to minister? To a Jewish man in your congregation, to a black man in your congregation.
I hold no ill will towards them, but if somebody is going to go ahead and say white people are the cause of all evils in the world, I'm going to say that's foolish, and I'm going to say if you're going to point fingers at me, let's look at your history and see just how much better than me you are. It goes back to everybody. Genghis Khan. If you want to say that white people are the most evil people in the world, you want to say Hitler was the incarnation of evil. Genghis Khan killed 40 million people in less than, 3 years? Muslims, the death toll that nobody talks about on Islam is in India, where they've ethnically cleansed over time about 400 million of them since Islam declared war on India. If you're going to sit there and point your finger at white people about how great you are and how evil white people are, I have every right to say, hold on, buddy. You're pointing three fingers back at yourself. If we're societally obligated to look at people as groups, then let's look at what they're currently doing. Let's look at the National Crime Victimization Survey. Let's see who's doing what and hold them accountable as agents with free will.
Now, are you going to be able to do that while still teaching your people to turn the other cheek? How will you be able to do that?
I'm not advocating for violence here. Mm-hmm. I'm not, and I'm not, I don't hold any ill will for any races right now, all right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think, no, I'm never gonna, because I love everybody as Christ has told me to love one another as Christ, as Christ loves everybody. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever should believe in them shall not perish but have eternal life. Mm-hmm. I have no ill will for anybody.
So you believe all mankind can be saved, anyone who turns to Jesus for salvation can be saved.
Absolutely.
Can become mature in their faith. Fellowship with other Christians. And by the way, I'm not one who thinks that we should force black people to go to white churches or white people to go to black churches.
I'm not crying out for diversity here. I'm not screaming out that we need diversity, because multiculturalism and diversity, can you name me five benefits of it outside of food and music?
The multicultural, I think it's nice to appreciate the differences from different cultures, and I'm proud to be half Italian and proud to be half Portuguese. At the same time, multiculturalism as a political agenda has been nothing but anti-Western civilization, anti-American garbage. We agree on that. But do you agree with the Founding Fathers in the Statement of the Declaration of Independence that all men are created equal?
I think all men are created different.
Are they equal, though, in the eyes of God?
Spiritually speaking, yes. I think, though, every single person is absolutely different. None of us here in this room are equal, per se. We're not exactly the same.
Were not idiots. The Founding Fathers knew, when they said all men are created equal, that everybody's different. I mean, they look at James Madison, the guy
when they said that,
very short. They looked at George Washington, he's a big dude.
When the founders said that, they meant all white men are created equal. And
that's not what they said in their writings.
1791, the Immigration Act. Mm-hmm. All free white men of good character and good standing are allowed to immigrate to the United States, and that was it. That was our founders.
The Founding Fathers, even Jefferson himself, Lincoln cleared this up in the Lincoln and Douglas debates. The Founding Fathers believed all men. Now, they didn't believe that automatically meant that you could get citizenship and the rights of citizenship. They did only want those who owned property to vote, and I think that's a good point that the Founding Fathers had.
Yeah,
because if you have people who vote who don't own property, they could vote for themselves property of others that do. And so you had to have some skin in the game. Yeah, but at the same time,
by law, the only people that the founders allowed by their law, the Immigration Act of 1791, the only people they allowed was white men of good standing and good character. So now I personally, again, I'm an ultranationalist. I don't want anybody immigrating here. We need to give our own nation some room to breathe and stop brain draining other countries of their college graduates. Let them improve their own countries so that we stop getting people whining to us about foreign aid.
Do you believe that all men are created equal and they have an inalienable right from God of life, that they have the right to life?
Yeah, I don't believe in killing anybody. I'm not a big ethnic cleanser.
Do you believe that they have the right to liberty?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Okay, I have problems with that with your fascist views.
Yeah, I believe that needs to be restricted in many ways. Like, your free speech stops once you start advocating for the destruction of the nation or some communist revolutionary transformation. The Frankfurt School should have been executed. I don't care who they are. I do believe, look, when it comes to what rights one person has and what rights another person has, et cetera, that shouldn't be along racial lines.
Okay, and then all men should have the ability to pursue happiness. Now, you seem to, in our debate, you seem to kind of butt heads with me on that.
I don't think, I'm sure, I'm fine with people pursuing happiness and pursuing their own material wealth to some extent, but when it comes to...
It's not just material wealth. The reason why Jefferson didn't follow Locke and put down the pursuit of property, he didn't want people thinking the government owes them property.
But back then, happiness
so he said pursue of happiness so that you can get property if you want. You can chase your dreams if you want.
Yeah, and I honestly...
So you could be a pastor if you want.
Yeah, and I honestly don't think that the government should make its policies based on economics in terms of seeing people as... just another unit.
I don't see that we need to have
a meritocracy.
Yeah, I don't see that at all. I think that the Founding Fathers saw humans as human beings. They weren't as consistent as they should have been with all human beings, but they saw us as human beings, not as just one more tile in the floor of the state.
Yeah. When we're talking about witnessing to these people, though, mm-hmm. need everyone here and everybody listening to this.
And that's my final question, too, how can we reach those in the alt-right?
Okay. First off, you need to realize it is not against Scripture to believe in what these guys believe. I mean, again, if they are some racial supremacist that wants to kill everybody that's of darker skin than them, that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. That's stupid. But when it comes to somebody who is a monarchist or who believes in Richard Spencer's ethno-state, there is nothing in Scripture specifically against that. And if you're witnessing to them by arguing their morality, you're going to lose the debate.
Well, I do think when we witness to people, if I'm going to witness to a homosexual, I'm going to talk to them about Jesus. So I don't think bringing up people's sins is always the best. I mean, letting them know you're a sinner. I'm a sinner. We all deserve hell. Salvation is through Jesus. But I don't need to, you know, I'm not going to spend all my time with an alcoholic to get him to stop drinking booze so he goes to hell sober. I want to lead them to Christ. So I want to give the good news. At the same time, that doesn't mean I have to justify their sin. And I think a lot of what you mentioned about the alt-right, I do think is against Scripture.
Okay.
So when I'm witnessing to them, I'm not going to justify a lot of their beliefs. At the same time, like the alcoholic and the homosexual, I don't want to talk to a homosexual for an hour about homosexuality. I want to talk to the homosexual for an hour about Jesus.
And here's where, I would say first step, keep in mind Romans 10:9. If you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus Christ and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you shall be saved. Nowhere in Scripture does it say someone's going to hell because they're a National Socialist. I hang out with National Socialists. I witness to them. I'm trying to make sure that we don't have a big supremacist bent that wants to kill all of the black people or whatever. I don't want that. But it is a good idea to know who you're talking to. And because this is a big tent with a lot of different viewpoints in it, can we at least say, once you get to know somebody, yeah, sure, I mean, you can witness to him all you want about Christ himself, but know who you're talking to. A pagan will jump down your throat saying, you worship a kike on a stick because Jesus was crucified, Jesus was Jewish, so blah, blah, blah. Then I can talk to them about, look, Jesus didn't die so you'd be Jewish. And there's a huge difference between Christianity and Judaism. You know about the Talmud. Christianity is the most non-Talmudic religion in the world. Why don't we talk about that? Because, no, being a Christian doesn't mean you're automatically a Jew. And I don't believe that we're a replacement Israel.
Now you did mention that a lot in the alt-right do like the high liturgy, like of Lutheranism and stuff like that. So that's...
advocate, if you're talking to a traditionalist or somebody who leans towards that, and that's my camp. I have very minimal views on the other aspects of it. I used to be a paleo-conservative, but now I'm very just highly traditional in everything that I'm talking about. Hey, I can talk to him about that, and if somebody is a radical traditionalist, I can bring up, look, man, you're talking about your European beliefs and your paganism and stuff like that, but all of the pagans that you're so highly fond of, their religion sucked and their people ran from it. And there's a reason for it, because Christianity is clearly superior. I can get into the differences and even maybe the philosophical proofs against it.
So it's pretty much building relationships with them, getting to know them, loving them right where they're at. Certainly, I would have more difficulty finding common ground with them than you would. At the same time, as a human being created in God's image, I think created equal, and fallen, we're all fallen. I think I could find some common ground, but I don't have to agree with many of their views.
And keep in mind, a lot of this is postmodern. A lot of people do hold on to images, to feelings, and everything like that. So, if, let's say, you talk to some 1488er who's just worships his race and he hates Jews, well, first off, I can tell him that, A, you're hyper-national socialism that takes it even further than Hitler did. Look, dude, that's Talmudic. You're holding the same chosen people, the goyim are all stupid look attitude that the Jews had. How are you any different? But what I'm witnessing to him, I can go, let's face it, man. Used to be Christendom was white people. All of Europe, almost all of America, that's Christianity. Why don't you hold to what your people have believed in for the past 1700 years since Constantine got in, the Edict of Milan? Why don't you hold to that? And they'll, yes, on a logical level, that's not going to reach somebody who's like a philosopher king, but I can reach them in terms of how they're feeling about it and talk to them about, look, that is it. Look at that beauty. Look at that tradition. Look at the liturgy. Look at who we are. And you can hold on to that as a part of your pride. Find Christ. If somebody believes in HBD, if they're human biodiversity and they're an evolutionist, then I can witness to them on more philosophical and scientific grounds and go, look, you believe in evolution. Well, evolution is false. Let's look at it. It's a fairy tale for adults to keep them degenerate because they're told, hey, we're nothing but monkeys, so let's go have an orgy and do drugs. No, that's stupid. Let go of that. Let's look at the actual scientific reason for it and the actual philosophical reason. I love bugging people that are evolutionists about the modal ontological argument because they never have an answer for it.
And we don't have time to get into what that is, so you'll have to read philosophy on your own. Well, it's the time ran by really quick. We're pretty much out of time, so the interview is going to have to end. Boy, I tell you, I love you. I love you as a brother.
I love you too.
But we, you know, we got a lot of differences. We both love Jesus and trust in Jesus on this race thing and human equality, stuff like
both
that.
Both of us love everybody.
We got a lot of differences, but I love you, and we want to reach everybody with the gospel. Black Lives Matter people and people on the alt-right, we want to preach the gospel that God the Son became a man and died on the cross for all mankind.
I'm all for reaching everybody. Mm-hmm. This is where I'm at, though, in my ministry.
Okay.
So need to keep that in mind, and please don't just see this as, ooh, Phil Fernandez talking to this evil racist. No. This is somebody that just holds alternative hypothesis for who we are and what we're doing.
Okay, well, thank you, and God bless.
God bless.